This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM, by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Darcy Nonemaker, Government Affairs Director for the Washington Environmental Council, and Chris Swartzbicki, Executive Director of FutureWise. Both Washington Environmental Council and FutureWise are members of the Environmental Priorities Coalition, a network of over 20 leading environmental groups in Washington State that influence policy at the state level. Darcy Nonemaker and Chris Swartzbicki are here to tell us about environmental legislation in the 2017 Washington State Legislative Session, which ended July 20th, after three overtime sessions. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Diane.
Before we speak about legislation, would you characterize the political environment in the 2017 Washington State Legislative Session?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. In Washington State, we have a divided legislature. We have a one-seat Republican majority in the Senate and a two-seat Democratic majority in the House. And that means there's a lot of divisions between those two chambers. And that certainly is what we saw this year.
It's interesting the way that that dynamic plays out in reference to the Environmental Priorities Coalition that we're going to discuss today, because the coalition started up 14 years ago during a time period when there was a Democratic majority. And the tactics that we need to take with the legislature, you know, given the perspective that legislators have, is very different today than it was back then. And we're struggling with trying to figure out how to work through that.
There was some disappointments in regard to environmental legislation in the 2017 session, but let's start with the positive. What were some wins for the environment during the 2017 session?
There were some important wins this year, especially when we think about the Trump administration starting in January. That also set an interesting tone for the legislative session. And so it was great to see action around closing a big oil tax loophole, a tax benefit that refineries and oil companies were never intended to benefit from. It was created in the 40s before we had refineries in the state. And now the oil companies that are typically out of state received more than 90% of the benefit of this old kind of existing tax loophole. That loophole was closed. That was a big win. That was a 2014 priority for our community and something we've been advocating for ever since. There was also progress made on providing incentives for solar energy and developing solar in the state, which was great. And we were worried that that type of incentive, there could be political games played and trades made. And ultimately, that was not the case. So feel really encouraged about the recognition of solar and clean energy and the leadership that Washington State should be playing in that space. And then finally, part of the final package deal was a tax benefit that would promote fossil fuel use at a coal plant in Centralia called the TransAlta plant, another past priority for our coalition to get a transition of that plant and to close that plant down. And that fossil fuel tax break was vetoed by the governor. So I think it sends a really strong message that Washington State is committed to moving away from fossil fuels and toward clean energy.
Would you also comment on funding for the Clean Air Rule?
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. The governor and the Department of Ecology adopted a new Clean Air Rule and needed funding to implement that new rule. And that rule reduces greenhouse gas emissions in the state and is an important tool in the toolbox to address climate. And the Senate had originally proposed a budget that did not fund the Clean Air Rule, and the House did. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the rule was funded. So that was a big win for the environment as well.
Before we go into more detail, would you just highlight the environmental legislation that was left undone?
So I'll kick it off again. This is Darcy. I think that we had three environmental community priorities at the Priorities Coalition this year. One was completing some unfinished business around oil transportation safety. And given how crude oil is moving through our state by rail and over water and through pipelines, how do we actually really step up and make our system safer and ensure that there's permanent funding at the state level for that work? So that was one of our priorities. The second priority was stabilizing funding for toxic cleanups and toxic pollution prevention work, as well as grants to local communities that are facing a pollution problem that they need to address. It comes from a voter-approved law from 1988 that has a tax on polluters to fund it, and that tax is heavily dependent on the price of oil. So we've lost about $375 million from those accounts over the last 3 years with the drop in oil prices, and we really needed to stabilize that. We had a $70 million shortfall this year. And then the third priority was around sustainable water management. I'll let Chris speak to that.
Sure. And just a little background on the Environmental Priorities Coalition. The way it works is that all of the different members on the coalition have the opportunity to bring forward a priority for the group to work on in the legislature. And so this year, FutureWise brought forward the Hearst issue, which, to make a long story short, results from a Supreme Court case that FutureWise won last October of 2016, which essentially reinforced Washington State's water law as it relates to residential development. It says that when a home is built in the rural area, water essentially has to be physically available there in the ground if a new well is to be drilled. That doesn't impact surface or groundwater so that wildlife is protected and that neighbors are protected and their wells are protected. And it also reinforced the part of the law that says that you have to have legal access to that water as well as it being physically available. So it reinforced Washington State's first-in-time, first-in-right water laws. And it was a very complex and controversial outcome, and that we were there at the legislature to defend that outcome this year.
And I would also just add that part of the good work that FutureWise and Sierra Club and other partners leading on that issue did was they really wanted to provide some solutions, because there's recognition that the court case is an important statement on water law and protecting existing water rights. But how do you actually have balanced solutions that ensure people can build their homes, but that there's a water management system that is better today than it was a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Yeah, I'll just follow up on that as well. I think the way the Republican legislators frame this issue is that there needed to be a quote-unquote fix for this outcome of the Hearst decision. And we see it very differently. We don't think it needs to be fixed. We think it needs to be implemented, that water resource planning needs resources to be able to be implemented, and that communities need to embrace it, and that counties need to plan for how their rural communities are going to grow. It's not really about fixing it. It's about moving it forward and getting it implemented.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Darcy Nonemaker, Government Affairs Director for the Washington Environmental Council, and Chris Wurzbicki, Executive Director of FutureWise. Our topic is the outcome of environmental legislation in the 2017 Washington State Legislative Session. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. So a capital budget also wasn't passed. What are the implications for the environment of having no capital budget?
This is really unprecedented, at least in the time that I have been working in the legislature. And I will say, going back to the records since 1985, we have not seen a time where a new two-year capital budget or a construction budget to move projects forward and fund them, that hasn't been adopted. So this is really a low point, I would say, in terms of a budget of our state. You know, a budget like the capital budget or the construction budget has typically been bipartisan. It requires a supermajority vote. It is very collaborative and positive. And so we in the environmental community organize around the capital budget to ensure that environmental projects and clean energy projects are funded and are part of the mix. And it is one of the best ways to make progress on the ground, whether it's updating infrastructure so that water is cleaner, or funding clean energy projects and solar projects in eastern Washington, or forestry projects to prevent and mitigate the damage that wildfires can do to our communities. That work is all done through the capital budget. So the capital budget, the environmental portion of the budget, is about 29%, so it's a good portion of the budget. We, in our coalition, identified about $360 million worth of project investments that were needed across the state, covering clean water, habitat restoration, forestry, clean energy, and ultimately those dollars are left on the table. And what that means is the projects don't move forward on the ground. Construction companies that are figuring out who to hire for project work that's going to be funded out of the capital budget, they can't really make those decisions right now in terms of those jobs and what is needed for their companies. And we also have federal dollars that get left on the table. So typically the federal government, in certain situations like water infrastructure or salmon recovery, provides money to leverage with state dollars to really maximize the work that can be done on the ground. And those dollars are now going to be in jeopardy. We don't know where those federal dollars are going to be 6 months from now. So that's a real disappointment. And then finally, there was a lot of activity around trying to avoid a government shutdown with an operating budget, which basically pays for staff, state staff, keeping the lights on, paying the bills for operating programs. Well, there's a real connection in the capital budget for that as well. And the State Recreation and Conservation Office, for example, it's a small agency, but most of what they do is get grants and funds to capital projects on the ground. So without a capital budget, there's great uncertainty for a vast majority of staff at that agency on whether they're going to have a position in a few months.
Just in terms of background, I think it's also interesting to note that the capital budget was essentially held hostage as a result of not being able to move forward on a decision related to Hearst. And as FutureWise, I have to admit, it feels very strange to kind of be at the center of having the state not pass a capital budget. But I think it's really important for Washingtonians to understand that FutureWise and the partners that we work with, including the tribes, brought forward a lot of different bills and a lot of different solutions. I call them solutions, even though I don't want to say that it needs a fix, but lots of ways to implement the Hearst decision throughout the state in a very reasonable, workable way that did not consume tremendous resources, that maybe relied on some capital funds, but then would be sustained through development permit fees, so that development essentially is paying for development. So there were lots of ideas on the table for moving this forward, and none of those were moved ahead. And as a result, we ended up with the state lacking a capital budget, which we certainly did not foresee that outcome. And we would like to be able to try to continue to work on these bills that will bring some sort of resolution to this problem and hopefully get a capital budget before the end of the year.
If I could just add to that, I would say there are controversial issues every legislative session. And the precedent of connecting an issue to something like the capital budget, which has, again, typically been bipartisan, collaborative, in part because it does so much good for local communities. So to see the political link and the positions that people took to ultimately lead to no capital budget is very concerning to us moving forward.
What steps are being taken to address the issue of not having a capital budget for Washington State?
We are hopeful that we will get a capital budget at some point. I know that even though the legislature is not in session, there are lots of conversations happening about how to break this impasse. We also have a big election, obviously, later this year, which could determine control of the Senate. So I think there's a lot of lay of the land sort of context out there that could turn something around at any time. But in addition, the legislature will be coming back in January. And typically what happens with the capital budget is they'll adopt a two-year budget and then they'll sort of make refining changes to it in the next legislative session. And it might be that we just need to wait until they come back to town, and then we pass a two-year budget sometime within the next 6 months. In the meantime, I know that agencies and many others are doing contingency planning, just like they would for a government shutdown. So they are making adjustments to how they spend money and trying to figure out how to keep staff on board to avoid laying them off, because you can't recruit people and replace them quickly once they're gone. So there's a lot of that kind of behind the scenes scrambling right now.
In addition to the capital budget, how would you characterize funding for the environment in the 2017 session?
I would say it's a mixed bag. Frankly, that's probably how it is every time there's a budget for the environment. As you pointed out, we have great victories like funding for the Clean Air Rule and closing the big oil loophole and just making sure that there are steps forward, particularly in the climate space. In other areas, there's a lot of work left unfinished. Our state oil spills program, which is the critical safety and oversight to prevent oil spills on Puget Sound when we have barges and vessels carrying crude oil from Canada or from North Dakota or from Alaska, that program is in a deficit. It has a $3 million hole in its program. And so that was left unfinished by this legislature. Also, the toxic cleanup and toxic prevention work, it is a $70 million hole in this budget that was not addressed. And in fact, the legislature also reduced state general fund dollars, which is a very wonky term, but basically what that means is the general fund is the foundation for how the state funds its programs. And the legislature has continued to erode the general fund portion, the slice of the pie, for environmental programs for general fund work. So 10 years ago, environmental programs were about 1.6% of the general fund. Today, they're less than 0.7%. So it's quite a steep decline. The Department of Ecology has lost more than 60% of its general fund support over the last 10 years. And we saw more of that kind of accounting bad math in the budget where they're cutting general fund and then replacing that money with our state toxic cleanup fund dollars, which is already in a state of crisis. So there's a lot of missed opportunities, but also there's an unsustainable balance in the environmental budget that we need to confront.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Darcy Nonemaker, Government Affairs Director for the Washington Environmental Council, and Chris Wurzbicki, Executive Director of FutureWise. Our topic is the outcome of environmental legislation in the 2017 Washington State legislative session. Would you say more about the implications of the People, Farms, and Fish legislation not passing?
Sure. So essentially what we are left with, and this is, as we were referring to earlier, the Hearst decision, what we were left with was the status quo. The state Supreme Court case that we won in October stated that communities have to start planning better for rural residential water resources, and that ruling stays on the books, essentially. So communities need to start doing that work. And the way that this work occurs out in the rural areas of Washington is through the comprehensive planning process. It takes years to be able to do the planning work and get it on the books and get people engaged with doing it. It's not something that happens immediately, like the door closes on development or closes on people's ability to have access to water, although some rural communities would like to portray it that way. It's not really the case. It's a process that takes place over time. So essentially, the legislative session ended with that ruling still in place, with no change. And the potential outcomes that could have come out of this were a complete rollback of that outcome to, you know, the day before, essentially, that the state Supreme Court made that decision. Or a bill that would have helped implement water resource planning in rural communities. And that's really what we were trying to advance. We think that there are a couple of other models around the state that could be used as an example for how to do this type of planning. Kittitas County, for example, is a county that's had a lot of struggles with access to water for residential use. And they have implemented a water bank system and a mitigation system that could be implemented on a statewide basis with some nuances for different communities. As well as the Dungeness has also gone through a similar process of water banking and trying to evenly balance out water for residential and for agricultural uses. So again, it's not an impossible challenge to solve. It's just it needs resources and it needs commitment to be able to really advance the water planning in the state. And we know it as climate change continues to exacerbate access to water, both ground and surface water, that this problem is only going to get worse. We have people right now out in the Spokane area and in Western Washington here in Whatcom County where neighbors' wells are running dry as a result of neighboring developments going in next door. So the problem is very real on the ground. It's real for people who are trying to buy lots and build homes in rural areas and who right now can be sold a lot that doesn't have legal or physical access to water, and they don't know that. So that's one of the contexts that we've been trying to frame this issue in is consumer protection. This is really, it's about the environment, but it's also about people. It's about people looking to build and buy homes and getting them the information they need before they make a purchasing decision.
So what steps are going to be taken statewide now to try to address this water issue?
Like Darcy was saying, there's probably the opportunity for the legislature to take up a capital budget decision again before the end of the year or in January. And it's very likely that this or Hearst decision and the outcome of that will come up again as a result of this. So we'll be back kind of at square one. And an interesting development that occurred at the very end of session was the involvement of the tribes on this issue. We didn't have a lot of participation going into session to try to craft bills with the tribes to be able to work through this problem. But they did step in at the end, recognizing that their water rights, their senior water rights are at stake, and helped kill the bills that would have turned back the clock on the Hearst decision. And so one of the things we are going to be working on in the next few months is to really build our relationships up with the tribes, try to figure out how do we work together to use our kind of technical expertise and their political advantage to be able to work through a solution on this, because it's likely coming to a head again very soon in the next probably 6 months or so.
Well, you've already alluded a bit to this, but in what ways did the 2017 Washington State Legislature address climate change?
In addition to the incremental steps forward around solar energy and funding the Clean Air Rule, there was an active conversation on a tax or a putting a price on carbon pollution. It was House Bill 1646. That bill would generate funding from polluters who are releasing carbon pollution into the atmosphere, and then those funds would be reinvested in ways to accelerate our transition to clean energy, which we know that combination of taxing the pollution source and reinvesting in cleaner technologies is the strongest way to accelerate emissions reductions. And it's really, frankly, an economic opportunity for Washington State to be a leader. So in addition to that connection, it would also fund things like water projects, ranging from water supply connected to the Hearst issue, potentially, and just thinking about how we manage our water system overall, and also reducing pollution and flooding risks that we know are going to only get worse under any climate change scenario. And then finally, investing in forest projects, which we know forests are very good at absorbing carbon. In particular, Western Washington forests, our Cascade forests, are incredible at that. So we should be utilizing that asset, as well as reducing the risk of wildfires and really addressing disease in our forests that make them dangerous. And then there were also components that are good for workers, good for communities of color, which we know low-income and communities of color are really at the front line and are affected worse by climate change and by pollution in general. So it's a complex policy, but it's really designed in a way to really cover the full gamut of state issues when it comes to climate change and put us on a path to be a leader. So that bill was in the budget discussions, the revenue conversations until June, really. And then it ultimately was not passed, but we feel very good about the conversation and the education that we were able to do with state legislators on the merits of a carbon tax and how that could fit into our system as a fair and equitable source of funding.
So overall, what is your characterization of the 2017 Washington State legislative session for environmental legislation?
I think in general, as we talked about, there were some good steps forward. But overall, the term that really comes to my mind is missed opportunities. There were lots of missed opportunities to make progress on critical issues that are urgent and that we face today. And that ranges from oil spills to toxic cleanup funding to the capital budget to Hearst. I mean, there's a lot of work that could have been done and progress that could have been made this year that was not made.
Yeah, I'd say the same, that there were definitely missed opportunities. There were also opportunities that were taken to kind of turn back environmental regulations as well. You know, FutureWise, our mission is dedicated to protection and preserving the Growth Management Act. And there are a number of growth management related bills kind of chinking away at the strength of growth management that passed this session, one of which we've been working on for several years to try and defend against, which was allowing schools to be built outside of the urban growth area, which doesn't sound like a big deal. But from our perspective, what happens and really what does happen on the ground when you build a school outside or away from the urban community that it serves, you have to build services and infrastructure to be able to serve that school, water lines, sewer lines, roads, et cetera. And these schools become a driver for suburban sprawl because once the facilities are available, development follows in its path and takes advantage of those resources and that infrastructure. And that really works against the growth management laws and the pattern of growth that we're trying to achieve in Washington. And that law was essentially overturned this session. So that was disappointing.
And just to add to that, just to also explain that from Washington Environmental Council's perspective, the Growth Management Act is a critically important tool that also directly ties to the environment, whether it is carbon emissions by having more roads and having people drive longer to get to their place of work or to their home, or we also know that toxic runoff from roads when it rains or when it snows, that's our largest source of water pollution in the state. So the more we pave things over, the more of a water pollution problem that means that we have to address in how we plan our infrastructure. So there's lots of ways in which the issues connect, but the Growth Management Act is such a critical law to make sure that we build our communities the right way to avoid repeating some of the mistakes that we've seen before the Growth Management Act existed that we're really paying for now and trying to fix. And it's way more expensive to pay for those changes down the road than it is to be smart up front and think about how you're really going to design your communities.
I think Darcy's getting to an interesting point here, which is that there is a lot of connection between all of the environmental priorities, not just the ones that our coalition supports, but between all of the entire environmental agenda, and they all relate to climate. Mm-hmm. You know, we were saying this just the other day at a meeting that it's hard for us to separate climate from our individual environmental priorities. And we sometimes, I think, hesitate to want to make the connection to climate because of the climate science denial that is out there. And so sometimes saying the word climate can kind of work against you in some cases. But it's very much true that all of the issues that we're working on have a connection to climate, and that every time we lose one of those parts of the puzzle, we are working against climate in the bigger picture.
What can be done to ensure progress on environmental issues in the 2018 legislative session?
I think it remains to be seen. We have a big election this year in King County that could determine the balance of power in the Senate. I don't know that that in and of itself will kind of fundamentally change things, but it certainly is a big enough change that it's possible we could have a pro-environment majority in the Senate for the first time in a number of years. And so I think the optimism we have is that we can have a different conversation about environmental issues. And over the last few years, we've been spending a lot of time in the Senate having really outdated and tired conversations around whether climate change is real. And that is just frankly not going to help move our state forward and have a better future. So I think it's a short session in 2018. It's an election year. The legislature tends to want to wrap up their business so that they can go fundraise and engage in the election season. So I think unlike the 2017 session, where we just kind of went on and had the longest session in history, there's an opportunity for us to really be focused about what it is that we need to get done before everybody leaves town and focuses more on elections. So I'm personally optimistic. I think that there are issues that are going to be coming back, whether it's climate, oil safety, toxic cleanups, that's a huge one, and maybe water management, depending on what happens this fall, and maybe the capital budget. There's so much unfinished business that there's a lot of ground to cover in a short session.
What's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
With the Trump administration, which is obviously hostile to the environment, we need state leadership now more than ever. And that's such a tired phrase and a cliche at this point, but it really is true. So I think we want to hear from people about issues that they are concerned about, but we also want to invite them to partner with us and to join our choir so that we can push for stronger action in 2018.
I guess I would encourage people to try not to think about environmental issues as a black and white issue. It's not somebody wins and somebody loses. And the Hearst issue that we dealt with this year in session is a perfect example of that. Republican legislators frame this conversation as we are trying to prevent rural development from having the water they need, or we're trying to keep water from people and either they can have it or they can't. And that's really not the case. Just like all of these environmental issues, there is room for negotiation. We want people to be able to have the resources they need. But in order to make that sustainable for people, we have to be able to work together on solutions.
One other thing that comes to mind, if you are somebody who cares about the environment, then please run for office or volunteer with FutureWise or WEC or any number of environmental organizations that do really good work. There is a need for leadership on the environment, especially given the Trump administration, that we haven't seen in a long time.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
You were just listening to Darcy Nonemaker, Government Affairs Director for the Washington Environmental Council, and Chris Wirzbicki, Executive Director of FutureWise. For more information, check on the web at environmentalpriorities.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on KEXP.org.